All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason Gravely. Today, we're talking about a new trail concept called the Eastern Continental Trail. It's not brand new, but very few people have done it. In fact, Madison Blagden here, aka Pegleg, and yes, you're going to hear the story behind that name. It's awesome. Great name. She is the second female ever to do this full trail and only the 9th person ever to do this trail. I mean, thousands upon thousands of people have done the Appalachian Trail. So this trail is really taking the AT. Imagine the Appalachian Trail on the eastern side of the United States. So adding 1,500 miles to the northern segment of it, going from the northern end of the Appalachian Trail all the way to Newfoundland, 1,500 miles more of trail. And then adding another 1,500 miles on the southern end, going from Georgia all the way down to Key West, Florida. And yeah, a lot of it's on the road. A lot of it's brand new. A lot of it is not finished, but it's piecing together existing trails like the Florida Trail, the Pinhoti Trail, and some other trails up in Canada, and making it basically the new challenge. I foresee this being a huge challenge to thru-hikers in the coming years, as it can be completed in a year. It is obviously huge. It's almost like people that do marathons are now looking at ultras as like the new marathon. I think one day this ECT is going to be the next big thing. 5,500 miles, nearly a year of your life, keeping the party going, and you get so much diversity in this experience. Everything from, I mean, you truly almost get to the Arctic Circle. It feels like there's polar bears at the northern end, and at the southern end, you're down where there's crocodiles and alligators and sharks. And you're down in the tropics. You're down in basically the Caribbean. What a cool, vast array of experience. So this was a really cool conversation. If you want to check out more in depth of the blog that Madison wrote daily, go to thetrek.co. I will link link to that blog in the show notes. But let's go ahead and dive in. This was an awesome conversation. Really enjoyed it. A true, I'm going to say it, once in a lifetime adventure. Madison, congratulations. This is so cool. All right, folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. Today we're talking to Madison Pegleg Blagden, coming to us from the East Coast. Madison, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah. You were up late last night. I know we had to reschedule, so I really appreciate you being flexible. And but where are you coming from today? And is that home? That's what I always ask first.
Yeah, I am in Philly. I just moved here 3 weeks ago. I've never lived in Pennsylvania before. kind of just moved here on a whim. I'm from Massachusetts.
Why Philly on a whim?
I know one person here, and they're actually a hiker. They were on the PCT in 2022, and they had a room open in their apartment, and that was the only person I knew who had a room open in their apartment.
How are you liking Philly so far?
I like it a lot. It's a good energy here. It's like, it's keeping me busy, which is nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, take us through, so you grew up in Massachusetts, a lot of time outdoors, outdoorsy family, or was that something you had to figure out yourself?
Yeah, no, not a very outdoorsy family. I kind of have like beach parents. Like they love to be on the ocean and by the beach and stuff, which is nice. Like you're still outside.
It's
beautiful.
In its own way.
But not backpacking or hiking parents. I didn't really get into backpacking or do my first backpacking trip until I was 21.
And how was that? What was like the experience? Because sometimes when you know, you try the thing you end up loving for the, you know, when you try it the first time, it doesn't go that well. How was your first backpacking experience?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, like, I just had no idea what I was doing, but I was just in college and I just felt like I needed to do something, take a semester off and travel, do something. And I heard about these long distance trails. My roommate had done some sections on the Appalachian Trail. So I just decided, oh, what would be even cooler? I'm going to go out on the PCT because I love California. That'll be awesome. And my backpack probably weighed 50 plus pounds and I had no clue what I was doing. And so it was like, it was hard in the beginning, but I loved the atmosphere immediately. Like the people, the energy. I knew probably within like the first week, I was like, this is just the coolest thing I've ever done.
Wow. It is one of those things that can really just capture you. I mean, it's so fulfilling. And what's crazy is, you know, how familiar were you with like the Appalachian Trail growing up?
Not at all. I probably heard someone say the name, but I didn't really learn like fully of its existence until I was in college.
Isn't that wild? Just, you know, I think some crazy stat, like 2/3 of the U.S. live within a day's drive of that trail. Even down here in Florida, I can get to the trail, the Southern Terminal, in a day. And so like that's 200 million people live within a day's drive, and it's still this wild experience, and so many people don't even know it's there. It's pretty crazy how it just, you know, mingles its way through our country.
Oh yeah, even when you're on trail, sometimes people are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you didn't know that your house is 45 yards from the trail?
Isn't that crazy?
Especially in Florida, a lot of people didn't realize that there was a trail system passing through Florida.
The Florida Trail.
Yeah.
It's early days still in this trail. I think only a few hundred people have completed it, through hiked it. So, you know, you were wanting to do this. You enjoyed California, and you ended up doing the whole PCT. I mean, was there any sort of stepping stones to that, or did you just go for it?
Yeah. So in 2017, I only had like maybe 3 or 4 months in between the semesters of college. So I managed to do like the first half of the PCT. And then I didn't backpack, like long distance backpack again for 4 or 5 years. And then went back out in 2022 and was like, okay, I really want to do the PCT like the whole way through this time. And I knew more, and I definitely wasn't ultra light in 2022, but I was more experienced. So I went out with the idea of doing that. And then really just, there was just no turning back after that. Like that got me extra hooked.
And you redid those first 1,300 miles you did and then completed the second half.
Yeah.
Was there a thought of like, I'll just pick up where I left off versus, you know, starting all the way over?
Yeah, I could see it, but I wanted to do the whole thing. I figured if I could only do, you know, half of it and finish, you know, that would be fine. But I went out with the mentality of, I went south. So I was like, at least I'll start and I'll do the part I haven't done. But if I'm feeling good when I do that, then I'll just keep going and redo the sections I've already done, which I loved the desert and the Sierra and stuff. So it was great doing it again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've never done one of the Triple Crown trails, but if I did, it would definitely, without even question, be the PCT. Very so much. There's, you know, not, it's not as busy as the AT, but not as, I mean, it's so, there's so much variety from the Pacific Northwest to the deserts to the Sierra. Which is my favorite range. So take us through what, you know, as you did the PCT, what was kind of going through your mind about what to do next? Was there, you know, because that's a lot of time to think. That's a lot of time to self-discovery and just kind of think about your life. What was rising to the top? Was it like, because sometimes you get out there and you're like, okay, now I got to get my stuff together, you know, or now I got to go to do this next thing or get a job or whatever goal people have. What was kind of in your mind about what you wanted to do after that?
Yeah. Well, while I was hiking, I think I was just under the mindset of, I'm going to drag this out as long as I can. And as the trail kept going and I was getting close to the end, I was like above budget and thinking, wow, you know, when I finish the PCT, like I might not have to work. Like I could maybe take a little bit of time off and rest, and I might still be able to, you know, slide right into the next adventure. So I think that was a mentality that just definitely made it easier finishing the trail, being like, this adventure doesn't necessarily have to end. Like the PCT is going to come to an end, but I knew I wanted to do something else. Even before I was done with the PCT, I was joking with my trail family, like, guys, Appalachian Trail 2023. They're like, oh yeah, sure. Cause everybody says that when you're on trail, like, oh, I'm going to jump right in and do this and do that. But obviously you go home, life takes over, you get comfortable. Like there's endless reasons why you wouldn't get back out on trail.
Did you have your trail name at that point?
Yeah, I got my trail name. I didn't get a trail name in 2017, which is so funny. I was in a Tramalee for over 1,000 miles and none of us had trail names.
Really?
Just little weirdos who were like too comfortable with each other and just never named each other. But I got
anarchists.
One in the first week. I know, it's just not right. But I got one in the first week on the PCT in 2022.
Well, tell us about it. I mean, it's Peg Leg. You know, what's the story?
Yeah. So 2022, I was going to do a classic southbound hike, but the snow level was pretty high in Washington. So I wound up doing a little flip flopping. So when I started, I was with the bubble of northbound hikers who all had over 1,000 miles on their legs. So in my mind, I'm like, I'm running with these guys. Like I want to keep up, but I wasn't there. And I knew I wasn't there. I had to take my time and go slow. But I didn't want to. So I kind of just went out the gates, like running, trying to do 20 mile days immediately. And shockingly, that didn't really go well.
And what is that feeling like, knowing you want to stick with a group, but they're just going to take off on this multi-thousand mile trail? And, you know, what's that decision that like, all right, I'm holding back? Because it has to happen in a moment where you're like, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. You got to just be... I think the more you hike, you realize you can't keep up with people. Like if you're meant to hike with someone and it's going to work out, you don't have to force it. It's just going to happen. So if you feel like you're slowing down or going too fast to keep up with people, they're probably not the people you're supposed to be hiking with all the time. But so there's just so much time in the day. I think it was July. It's so the summer, the sun was setting at 9:00. And I was like, oh, well, if I do a, you know, 10, 15 mile a day, you're done. And it's like 3 p.m. So I just felt, I was like, oh, no, I can push. I can do more. And it only took 4 or 5 days for like to get serious IT band issues to a point where I couldn't bend one of my knees at all. So I was just like kicking my foot out around things and hiked probably for another 2-3 days before I finally got to town and was like, I have to take a couple of days off. This is not good.
Wow. And that's where Peg Leg came from.
Peg Leg, yeah.
Dang. So did going a little slower and going at your pace help that IT band issue?
Yeah. And there's a physical therapist who actually, she follows the bubble on the PCT. She specializes just in through hiking injury. So I got in touch with her. She gave me like stretches and exercises and told me to rest. And then those stretches and stuff, I did them every day on my through hike this last year and every day in 22, and I've never had the same problem again.
Wow. No kidding. That's awesome. Well, tell us, what is the bubble?
The bubble, the horde of hikers, like all accumulating in the same area. You normally would see it, I guess, at the start of the AT, like those first few weeks but you'll find it, you can find it anywhere. On the PCT, there were some big bubbles because of the fires. So in Northern California, everybody flipped up to like the Oregon, Washington line. So like literally more hikers, like you couldn't camp. If you weren't setting up camp by 4 or 5 p.m., you would get to a tent site and it was, you know, every tent site was full. And then there was people cowboying in between the tent sites. And it usually doesn't last more than a week or two, but sometimes you get those crazy pockets.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, at the start, of course, or when there's some sort of delay that's kind of damming everybody up. No kidding. So that's what that is. Wow. So is there like a, because I'm not a thru hiker, is there a platform you use to like track everybody? What would that be?
Yeah. So on the AT, there is like a registration that you is optional. You don't have to do it, but it's nice because a lot of people do it. So it kind of gives you a day by day gauge of, you know, 20 people said they're going to start on March 1st or 100 people. So you can try to plan around it and go a little sooner or a little later. And that's the same for the PCT. It's a permit system. So I can't remember if it's 35 or 50 permits per day. But so in the beginning, I want to say March, April, May, only a limited number of people are allowed to start per day. So you know it's going to be at least that many people out, but hopefully not too many more.
How about the Eastern Continental Trail? Now, this trail is pretty wild. I first heard about it, I think, last year with somebody biking it fully, which, you know, was pretty quick, but still just like a crazy distance and challenge. I think it was the first person to bike the thing in full. But how did you decide to jump from the PCT to something so much longer, so much bigger, and so much lesser known?
Yeah. I'd heard about the ECT maybe 2020 or 2021. I remember like seeing someone else's story who had done it and just talking to a friend like, oh my God, can you even imagine? Like, look at the distance that they walked. But I never thought it's something I would want to do. I used to say I would never hike the Florida Trail. Like the only way I would hike it is if I've hiked every other national scenic trail. But kind of just all took on a life of its own though. Like when I set out this year, I thought I'll do the Pinhoti Trail, which is like a 350-mile trail through Alabama and Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll definitely do the Appalachian. But just as I kept walking, it's kind of like on the PCT. I'm like, well, I still have money and I still have time. And the weather window was perfect. So it was just like, okay, well, you know, I'll finish the AT and I'll go to Canada. Then it was like, maybe I'll do Florida after. Maybe I'll go all the way up into Canada. I just sort of decided little by little as I went along, honestly.
You know, obviously the AT, it's well known, it's well traveled, it's well marked. Take us through, I don't know, some of the challenges of starting the Eastern Continental, because as folks have heard in the intro that I'll record, is that you're the second known woman to hike the ECT. Do you know how many people total have hiked it?
Yeah. So the 10th guy, I'm the 9th person ever that we know of. And the 10th guy, he just finished maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. There have been more, maybe like 30 or 40 people have done a big chunk of it. Like a lot of people stop up in Quebec where the land ends, just because that's like your continuous footpath stops. Although to get to the other little islands, you have to, you know, ferry and then hike across and then ferry. So some people don't choose to do that. But yeah, only 10 people have ever gone all the way Key West to Newfoundland.
Holy cow. Only 10 people. And you were 9th. That is wild. So where exactly does this start? And is there a marker or anything? Like, you know, I know it's been quote established for a while, but with only 9 people doing it ever, I'm sure there's not like tons of infrastructure in place.
Yeah. So, I mean, technically most people start in Key West. Okay. And the funny thing is, like in Florida, people either have no clue what you're doing or they know exactly what you're doing. Like when I was in Florida, people would be like, oh my God, ECT hiker. And I'm like, people on the Appalachian Trail don't know what the ECT is.
Wow.
So how did you know what it is? But they don't get a lot of backpackers in Florida. So if you're starting early in the season, like maybe you're doing the Florida Trail, but I think they realize most of the time, if you're starting down at Key West, like you're going all the way.
Wow. No kidding. So you started north and went south. Tell us about starting this. Like, how did you get all the way up there? I know there's water to cross. Could you take us through some of the unique challenges that are on the ECT? Because I've never heard of anybody doing it, or I've never talked to anybody doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started technically in Alabama just because I wasn't planning to go the whole way. So I did Alabama to Newfoundland, flew back to Alabama, and then went to Key West. classic. But I mean, yeah, like I was in Vermont for all that flooding you might have heard about on the news this year. The trail was closed. They closed the Appalachian Trail, like at your own discretion, basically. Someone drowned because the what was little teeny creeks, like water sources, turned into impassable rivers. So we wound up road walking to go around some of that, and it all worked out really well. And then there was some river crossings up in Maine. We got more rain when we were up there. Nothing too unmanageable on the AT. There are definitely a couple moments though. And then up in Canada, we had some of that too. I mean, I was in Canada in October, and we were crossing unexpected, unmapped river crossings in Canada when it was 38 degrees out.
Jeez. The PCT has a lot of variety, like we were talking about. And I've always thought the AT, you know, does, but not as much as the West, even the CDT. But this trail, when you connect all the way to the tropics of the Keys in Florida, to the Appalachians, to everything you'd see up in northern Canada or central Canada, I imagine there's quite a bit of variety. How did the variety compare between this trail and the PCT?
Yeah, I think it was satisfying, just like the PCT. Like you got everything. Beautiful. I mean, walking, hiking on the beach in Florida, crystal blue water, hiking through the swamps, alligators, road walking. And then you're on the AT, like such trail community. I mean, I hiked through Alabama, so that was kind of weird too. Like you have to road walk for 200 plus miles through Alabama. And then, yeah, you're on the AT, and it's just, that was just amazing. And then up in Canada, no other hikers up there. It's pretty remote. When you are in the woods, it was rugged. It was hard. I would compare it to maybe the White Mountains, like the, in Quebec, when we were in like the mountainy areas, the national parks and stuff, it was hard. And if it wasn't like that, you know, you were on road. There were moose, caribou. Yeah, I mean, and then just like lots of logistical things, you know, to ferrying and like hitching. We hitched one day 250 miles, you know, just there's no trail community out there. So the logistics are just a whole other game. Once you go up through, you finish at Katahdin, and then going through Maine, it's not too bad. I think the longest food carry was maybe 2 days or 3 days. And same for New Brunswick. A lot of Canada, probably 1,000 plus of the 1,500 miles was road. So in those areas, usually resupply was never more than a day or two behind or away. But there was, yeah, it was still things to think about. Like, are we going to walk right through a town? Do we have to detour our route? Because I found hitchhiking was pretty hard in Canada. Canadians are really nice, but people just, they did not know what we were doing because they've seen 8 people, 9 people ever up there. So they're just like, what are you doing up here?
For folks that are listening, it's this ECT is almost the backbone of it is the Appalachian Trail, but it is an extension on either end of the AT to where if you are going northbound and you finish at Katahdin, you can just keep going and do this part, this new, 1,500 more miles of trail.
Yeah.
Or if you could finish on the southern terminus, you can just keep going on the Pinhoti and then connect that to the Florida Trail. And yeah, I mean, it's just like an extension on either side. It's such a cool idea. All the way to where there's no land anymore. Like you can't, like this is maybe the new challenge for people. Is that what it felt like?
Yeah, kind of. That's honestly what it was for me. I wasn't sure if I could do it, you know? Like I was like, I wonder if my body can even go that long without injury. I'd never hiked more than 2,500 miles, you know, in a calendar year. So it was just, you know, I just had the mentality of I'm going to just see. I think I could maybe do it. I'm going to go for as long as I can and until the money runs out or until I physically can't go anymore. And the nice thing is you just take it a day at a time, you know, just keep walking and see, if I can walk again tomorrow and the next day and the next day, then I might eventually actually finish.
So what was the total mileage, give or take, and the total time you spent on trail for the ECT?
Yeah, so I of the five other people who did it in 2023, we all had slightly different mileages that we reported. Some people didn't track it at all. It's kind of, I wouldn't say it's a choose your own adventure, but there's definitely ways you can make it a little longer, a little shorter. I tallied it at 5,530 miles. So I'd say it could definitely be a little bit more. I know some people said maybe 5,700. But so that took me 322 days, so like 10 and a half months.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that helped make this show possible. With any adventure, hydration is very important. I've been on so many trips where I've been dehydrated or couldn't stay hydrated enough, and Element helps anyone, including especially adventurers, stay hydrated. Without the sugar and other dodgy ingredients found in popular electrolyte and sports drinks, you don't want to have cramps and headaches and fatigue and brain fog or weakness on trips, whether that's training or out on the adventure itself. And having the ability to have something like Element there is so important. Element is a zero sugar electrolyte drink mix free of all the sugar and artificial coloring. Element was developed by former research biochemist Rob Wolf, 2 times New York Times bestselling author and one of the Navy SEAL Resiliency Committee members for over a decade. From Olympic athletes to special forces to health experts to business leaders to everyday health, Element is their go-to choice for hydration. Our listeners can receive a free Element sample pack with any order when you go to drinkelement.com/adventuresports. That's drinkelement.com/adventuresports. And you can try Element totally risk-free. If you don't like it, give it away to a friend and they'll give you your money back, no questions asked. I've been using it on rides and paddles lately and I'm really enjoying it. Element, stay salty. Are you looking to sell anything at all online? Well, I would advise you to look into Shopify. They are a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. I use Shopify every day at my day job. It has been with us since our company was a tiny little team all the way up to where we are today, one of the biggest breweries in the country. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel, selling sleek skis, or selling non-alcoholic beer like we are at Athletic Brewing, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their personal POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. We manage a podcast, a blog, all that right there on our Shopify store. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and has extensive help resources whenever you're dealing with an obstacle. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ASP, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ASP. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. 10 and a half months. What was some of the most extreme weather you faced? Because over the course of 10 and a half months, you're basically going to experience every season. What was, you know, and I know you're timing it, trying to time it to where it's you know, nice wherever you are, but surely there must have been some shoulder seasons or weather windows that were not ideal.
So I think I got pretty lucky with weather. Florida was really, really tame, not too hot, also not too rainy. The AT, I was joking the first few months that I thought we were going to have a record year of a very little rain on the AT, because there were only maybe 3 or 4 days of rain those first couple months. And then it wound up actually being one of the heaviest rain years ever. So we got it all on the back end, that the flooding and stuff and all of that rain when we were around the Vermont and north of there, that was pretty brutal, but it was, the temperatures were comfortable. You were never worried about, you know, hypothermia or anything like that. It wasn't really until I was up in like northern Canada and Newfoundland in late in October, to where we had a couple of days where we were hiking in like sideways wind and rain, and you know, you your feet hurt, and then, oh well, nice, I can't feel my feet anymore, so they don't hurt anymore. And I was hiking with an army guy, and we took a break at some point one day, and he was like, guys, like, this is, we're right on the brink of like, we could get hypothermia. And I hadn't really thought about it. I was like, of course we're just going to keep walking. Like, we'll take a little break, we'll warm up, and we can't get hypothermia for hiking all day. And he was like, no, like, if the rain doesn't stop or the wind doesn't die down, like, we have to bail out. And so we tried to bail out, and nobody picked us up. But I mean, luckily, eventually the rain stopped, or the wind stopped, or something. So the temperature just went up just a little, and we were okay.
Man, I'm looking at some of these places in Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, and it's just beautiful. I mean, it looks like the Rockies, or just, I don't know. I just don't feel like I hear a whole lot about those areas. It must have been, I don't know, was it surprisingly wild and mountainous and beautiful?
Yeah, it was. Canada is incredible. Even when you're walking on the road, like, you're walking on the road next to the ocean for 200 miles, you know, or going through Quebec, you go through the Matane Reserve, which is like a pretty rugged wildlife area. And then you go through Gaspésé National Park. And it's like, it's rocky, like in a way I'd only seen on the West Coast. Just exposed, amazing. Like, I mean, some days, one day I saw 5 moose before 8 a.m. There was no one out there. You saw more moose droppings and hoof prints than hiker prints, you know?
That is so cool. I'm looking at this Gros Morne National Park.
Oh, yeah. It's not technically on the trail, but it's like such a small detour. So we took a few days and we side quested there and did. They have this thing called the Long Range Traverse. It's like it has a route, but it's unmapped. So we had to navigate and kind of just make your own way through, following like animal paths and then trying not to follow animal paths. And that, yeah, you go like with views of like a fjords, and it felt like you were in Europe. That was one of those moments. Like, I didn't necessarily think I was ever going to make it to Newfoundland. I didn't know if I'd be able to go that far. And when we were there, it's just like, it just felt like just such a bucket list moment. That was just some of the most incredible hiking.
I'm looking at pictures. I mean, yeah, just, and it's like some of the cliff. It looks like Yosemite Valley.
Yeah. Yeah. It's some of the oldest, like geological, I don't know what you'd call it, like mountains or rocks that exist on Earth. I want to say that like billions of years old. It's some of the, yeah, it's one of the oldest like ranges that there's left.
And I imagine in that area, there's hardly anyone at all.
Yeah, it's funny. So most people don't really hike out there. You actually have to meet with the rangers, and they have to talk to you to basically give you the okay to go out there, because they're so scared of rescue missions, because it's so easy to get lost. Like, the rangers that gave us a rundown, like, made us a list basically of like, here's a bunch of places where there's a really good chance you'll get lost, but here's what you do if you get lost. And like, we did, we definitely had moments that we did, but so the only way to get out there is by boat. So they put you on the fjord Gros Morne ferry tour. So you get to do this boat tour. And then at the end, they literally slow roll next to a dock. You run and jump off the boat. Just the three of us, we jumped off the boat, and then the boat rolled away, and everyone went back to get to their cars, and they just waved at us, and they were joking like, you got to feed the bears somehow. So every now and then we drop a few hikers off.
That's hilarious.
On the island. Yeah, it was just, that was so cool. And we were the only people out there. There was nobody else was out there. It's just our own little adventure. Some of the hardest 20 miles I've ever done was in Gros Morne.
What kind of bears are in Newfoundland? Do they? I don't think there are grizzlies, right?
No, it's so, they do have polar bears.
Oh, polar bear! Oh, wow! You're already.
We actually,
yeah.
I saw another hiker, Lil Buddha. He posted a video this year of a Ring doorbell camera footage. the ring footage was only from like 6 miles away from the International Appalachian Trail, and it was a polar bear. But super uncommon. But they can cross over, I guess, when the ice freezes. They can cross over between the provinces.
All right. So you finish that part, and what is at the finish line on the northern terminus of the ECT? Is there anything at all to indicate it?
No, nothing at all. We wound up we did Newfoundland south because of weather. We were literally running from winter. So when we wound up finishing, we finished at a Tim Hortons. So in true Canadian fashion, like, we rearranged our schedule and like did a few extra miles before we flipped up so that we could finish at a Tim's, because we loved Tim's.
Explain Tim Hortons to people that maybe don't know what that is.
Dunkin'
Donuts.
That's just Dunkin' Donuts of Canada.
Yeah, it's a famous hockey player, and they're everywhere. I mean, as soon as you cross,
it's good.
As soon as you cross the border, it's just like it hits you everywhere you can imagine. There's like a Tim. You can't get away from them.
No, we were obsessed. So it was kind of like an anticlimactic finish, you know, because you're just there. Oh, we're at this coffee shop. Let's get a coffee. Now we're done. And the two people I was with, that was it. They were completely done. They'd hiked the whole 5,600 miles. But when I finished up there, I still had almost 1,800 miles left to go. So they were so excited to be done and just like ready to go home. And I was like, okay, well, I'm flying to Alabama and taking 3 days off, and then I have to walk all the way to the U.S.
You might be the only person in history that's ever gone backpacking and extended from Newfoundland, and immediately your next trip, and then, like, you know, I assume very soon after, you're backpacking in Alabama. That's like so far apart of where you think you would be, your next stop would be. Take us through, what was that whiplash like? I mean, culturally, holy cow.
Yeah, it was so different. I mean, Canada in general, it is very different than the States. Like, it was perfect. After the AT, I had appetite issues. Like, I was burnt out on all food. And then we get to Canada and everything was new. All the food is different. Even the snacks that are the same, all most of the ingredients that we use here aren't legal in Canada. So even like Wheat Thins, Goldfish, everything tastes different. Crunchier, more natural. And so it was, eating up there was amazing. So that was great. And then the culture is so different up there. And flipping down to Alabama, it couldn't have been a bigger change. Like, deep south, fried chicken. But I was ready to be moving in the direction towards the finish line. So
yeah,
I was excited. I was also excited for crappy American food, like delicious fried garbage candy. Like, there's a lot of stuff they're not allowed to sell up there that we have here, which is pretty good stuff.
Yeah, that's right, baby. Freedom. Bless your heart. I'm sure you heard that a number of times in Alabama. So, you know, was there any segment of the experience you were maybe the most, you know, apprehensive about or just worried about? Maybe all of it equally, maybe none of it. What would you say?
Yeah, I'd say probably Canada, just initially, because when I finished the AT and started into Canada, I was alone, and I didn't know of anyone else who was close by on trail. So I figured, okay, I'm going to be navigating it all alone. And then I was really nervous about Quebec, because the primary language is French. When you're walking around Quebec, all the menus are in French, all the signs are in French. A lot of people are accommodating to English, but I mean, I was making reservations or trying to make reservations for places, and they wouldn't even speak to you if you didn't speak French. I didn't remember until I literally crossed the border to check to see if my cell provider would be covered in Canada, and it wasn't. So for the 2.5 months I was in Canada, I had no cell service. So the only way I could use my phone was on Wi-Fi. And when you're by yourself, that was nerve-wracking, just because it took more planning. I had to map everything out in town. I had to write down phone numbers so that if I had to call someone in town, I could use like someone's phone, another person's phone. But luckily, I mean, I caught up with other hikers, so it wasn't a problem, but it could have been.
Once you finished in Canada, did you jump on the southern terminus of the AT where the Pinhoti Trail starts? Is that where you started?
I'd actually already done the whole Pinhoti. I started at the southern terminus of the Pinhoti before the AT.
So how does that connect to the Florida Trail?
Yeah, so the southern terminus of the Pinhoti, if you go north, it starts the Pinhoti. If you go south, it starts this thing called the Alabama Roadwalk.
Sounds like a band.
That's a good name. But it is dirt road to start. But then you walk right through Montgomery, which is the capital. So it was a lot of like busy road, city area. And that's the only way to connect the Pinhoti to the Florida Trail, that road walk and then the Blackwater connector, which is then you finally get to the Florida Trail.
So take us through, so you're finishing the Florida Trail at the most westerly terminus. You know, a lot of times that's the end for people. A lot of people start in Big Cypress and you're on the beach. You know, that's kind of one of the, I think the only spot in the whole trail that, or the only segment that's on beach walking. What was that like?
Pensacola. It was so cool. And I wasn't sure if I was going to go and tag the northern terminus at Pensacola, because the funny thing is the Eastern Continental, it actually connects 50 miles into the Florida Trail. So if you do a continuous path, you miss those first 50 miles. And it just logistically, it seemed, you know, how am I going to get out there and get back? But someone I met on the AT was living in Navarre Beach, which is right by Pensacola. So he was like, yo, side quest, tag the northern terminus and I'll drive you right back to where you split off. So on a whim, like right at the point where I had to choose, do you go east or do you go west? I was like, oh, I'm going to the beach. So it was beautiful.
You know, a lot of people, especially through hikers who have seen a lot of trail, you know, there's a little bit of bias against flat, boring Florida, and listeners are probably like tired of hearing me talk about it. But I've talked to so many through hikers who've done the Florida Trail who are like, oh my gosh, it's like my favorite trail, or like it's one of my favorites of all time because of how unexpectedly cool it was. What was your experience with the Florida Trail? How much did you know going into it? Because for a lot of through hikers, it seems like maybe the most boring trail you could possibly do.
I knew enough to be scared.
Okay.
Like I know someone who hiked it 2 or 3 years ago and I'd watched their videos. So I knew what to expect. And I have a really big fear of alligators and swampy, murky water. So that's why originally I wasn't sure if I'd ever do it, but I loved the Florida Trail. I think I wouldn't write off doing it again. It was so fun. Like you just saw things that you would never see on any other trail. And I love road walking and I love flat walking. So after hiking, I mean, when I finished up in Canada, I'd hiked over 4,000 miles. So I was not complaining about, you know, finishing on almost 1,500 miles of just flat. It sounded amazing.
That's awesome. And now you went all the way to Big Cypress where the trail begins or ends. And that was the finish line, the official finish line of this whole experience, right?
That's the finish line for the Florida Trail.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, duh. Yeah. How'd you get from there to Key West? Like, what was that according to the ECT?
Yeah. When you pop out at Big Cypress, there's like an 8-mile little connector trail that's really like swampy and super similar to Big Cypress. And then the whole rest is like 180 something miles of just road walk all the way to the Keys. I mean, you do all the bridges, 7-mile bridge. So once you get out of Big Cypress, your feet are dry the whole rest of the time. And it's just smooth sailing, road and food all the way to the end.
That's a lot of, I mean, the Keys, it's like 90 miles of bridge over islands and it's beautiful, but very busy, probably, you know, just confined on a bridge. What was that experience like? That of course is road walking, which you've done thousands of miles of at this point, but it had to be different in a lot of ways.
I've heard from people that they really don't like that those sections of road, that the shoulder's really tight and it just makes them nervous. But after so much road, I felt comfortable. And there was never a time that I thought that the road was too tight or too busy or anything. And honestly, everyone was nice. People were really curious about what we were doing down there. And it was only good experiences walking through towns and people waving out their car windows and stuff. I don't remember a single time, maybe one time in all of Florida, that I was felt uncomfortable on the road or around people. But down in the Keys, it was all fantastic.
Speaking of that, you know, what was maybe something you heard a lot from people that saw what you were doing that was a big misconception? Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that helped make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
Well, in Florida, people think you're homeless. And in Alabama,
someone's... kind of are, right? You got me got a tent.
But yeah, they think you're like the, like a different kind of homeless. Like when I was in Alabama, someone screamed out their window at us, welfare cases. And I'm like, sir, like all of us saved money and all of all this expensive gear. And we took time off work. Like no one is paying us money. You really, it couldn't be more of an opposite from welfare. It's actually like, you have to be, you know, in a pretty good financial position to do anything like this. So yeah. And I think people maybe thought it was more road than it was in Florida. I heard a lot about, oh, it's get ready for road walking. And you hardly ever did more than 5 or 10 consecutive miles of road. Every now and then, maybe 20 miles one day or 30 miles. But I think Canada was, that was road walking. Florida was, you got a little bit of everything. And just when you felt like, oh, a little too much road, you're right back in the woods.
Interesting. Wow. That's good to hear. What would you say? I mean, how did you, this experience, 10 months, 10 and a half months, thousands of miles, I'm sure it was your new normal. How did you transition out of this? How was that transition back to quote normal life or back to life off trail? We talk a lot about on this show about post-adventure depression and just that transition time. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still kind of in that phase. It's the 23rd today. And I mean, I only finished January 12th.
Holy cow.
Just over a month. I'm kind of running from the blues. Like when I finished, like my friend actually picked me up and I got to hang with the Florida Trail northbound bubble for a few days. So just in denial, just got to have so much fun and then went home and saw family for the first time in a year. So I've hardly had like 24 hours to myself since I finished and then moved here and was like, well, I got to get a job like yesterday because I just moved here and I need to pay rent. So I've barely had time and barely slowed down. And I think that's exactly what I needed because I mean, it's sad looking at the photos and videos and reminiscing, like it definitely makes me sad. Just, I miss it. And it was, I mean, you forget, it was such a long experience. It's like, oh my God, that was this year. Like that was, how could that be from this year? Cause it just feels like such a long time, so much longer than it was.
More life and more packed into that than you can probably do in most years on earth. Like I'm sure it felt like a decade.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's just every day was so full of adventure. And it's funny, you come home and it's like, what did I do yesterday? What did I even do yesterday? Like it's hard to even remember because it's just so much routine. And it's not to say it's not exciting. Like it's different. This is a new, different chapter. When you're on trail, it's like, oh, yesterday we hiked a 25-mile day. And then remember that random guy brought us soup. And then we slept at that person's house. Like, it's just so much more exciting and unpredictable. But obviously, it can't last forever.
Could you tell us a story about maybe one of the most unpredictable things that happened out there? I know that's hard. I know all these are hard questions to answer, that especially that when you're searching for the most or the biggest or a single story. Is there anything that comes to mind that just kind of illustrates how random life can be on trail?
Oh, totally. Actually, one came to my head pretty quick. I will say there was a lot of moments on trail where you see someone who you hadn't seen in literally 3 or 4 months. And you're just barely passing. It's like, how did that happen? Or I saw people from other trails. I mean, that was all amazing. But when we were up in Canada, there's no trail community up there. People don't know what you're doing. And still multiple times strangers took us into their homes. And one night in particular, it was a really bad weather day. We tried to stop off along the way and get a motel room, but there was some kind of thing in town and everything was booked. We knew it was going to rain that night and the whole next day, and it was cold. So we tried to bail out, couldn't. We made our beds. We're like, okay, we got to hike. We have no choice. And we're walking into the dark, probably over a marathon day. And all of a sudden, I'm in front and there's two hikers behind me. A car slow rolls up next to me. It's like 8 o'clock at night. And they look over, this older couple. Hi, I just spoke to your friends, but do you want to come sleep at our house tonight? And I was like, what? And the wildest thing is we had just walked by this gorgeous house with a for sale sign and this big grassy side yard. And I vividly remember thinking, wow, that would have been a great place to tent. But obviously we're not going to tent in someone's yard. Like, we're not lunatics. And 30 seconds later, would you like to come stay in our house tonight? And they took us in, fully finished garage with a bathroom. Next morning, made us breakfast in their home. And they had no idea what we were doing.
No idea.
I think that was in Nova Scotia.
I'm sure a lot of people asked you, and I don't want to just, you know, continue asking the same questions, but like, what are some of the things that you did to stay safe out there for so long, especially road walking, especially alone, and, you know, being only the second woman to do this? I know that's a big topic, is like, how do you stay safe out there and make sure you're staying out of harm's way?
Yeah, I feel like the biggest thing is just mental. Like, if you're really fearful and scared and you think something's going to happen to you, that's just like the wrong mentality to be in. I was always like cautious and, you know, keep your wits about you and listen to your gut. But my general mindset with through hiking is like, almost everyone you meet wants to help you and is kind to you. There's always going to be people who aren't. So I carried mace. I had a sat phone. I tried to communicate like with friends and family, you know, at the end of the day. So if they didn't hear from me for 2 days, like, they know something's going on. And I, you know, cautious about who you talk to and just try to like judge, suss people out a little bit. But overall, like, I can think of one or two experiences in the whole year that weren't positive, and that's all. Everyone else, even when I'm alone, like, I think when I hike alone, people are actually nicer and more helpful because they're scared for you. Like, the number of times people picked me up hitchhiking and were like, oh honey, get in, like, I'm scared, who's gonna be next if I don't pick you up? Who's gonna pick you up? You know, what kind of weirdo is going to pick you up next? And I'm like, thank you. Like, I appreciate that. Like, you're more worried about me than I am, honestly.
Wow. You know, if you could, I know this is so recent, and I did realize it's only a month, really just over a month. What would you say this soon after finishing is maybe one of some or a few of the biggest lessons that'll stick with you, and maybe lessons that you will share with others when they ask you about this experience? Like, this taught me this.
Yeah, I think every time I through hike, it just really reaffirms like a mindset that I live by when I'm on trail, off trail, everything. Just the moment, like, you can't over plan, you can't over stress. It's the trail is going to happen. There's going to be, like life, there's going to be curveballs. And if you have a good, calm, unbothered mentality, if you kind of just give it all up to like the universe or to chance and just say, you know, do with it as you will, like, it's all going to work out. Everything is. And you roll with the punches, it always will work out. Like, the more flexible you are, the more things will work in your favor. I think when people are too rigid and they stress too much about the nitty gritty, things don't necessarily work out and go their way. But if all year I was just like, well, if this and this work out, then yeah, I'll just let it happen and we'll see where it goes. Oh, I hope this work. Like, that's basically how I wound up in Philly. I was like, dang, I really need to find an apartment somewhere. in a city where I can get a, you know, bar job. Hope that works out. And I didn't really put too much pressure on it. Just was like, it's going to happen. I'll look. It's not like I'm just going to wait for it to fall in my lap, but just don't force it. With thru hiking, like, you do not have to, if you're trying to force anything, it's, you're going down the wrong path. Let it just go naturally, play itself out how it will. And it always works out.
I think it's going to be really funny. You know, if you're working at this bar now and people are trying to impress you or tell you stories and you're sitting there with a year of thru hiking plus the PCT under your belt and just thinking, there's so much I could share. Have you found it difficult to relate to people in the last month? I know it's still fresh. I know a lot of this, you're still processing this post-trail life. Has that been a challenge at all?
I'd say only a little bit. I miss being around the community. I miss like being able to talk about trail more. And normally I try not to even bring it up. If people engage and they ask questions, I'll answer anything. But I've just learned most people, it's not that they don't care, but they only care so much. Like, it's cool. They think it's cool, but it's not their thing. And that's fine. So I don't force it too much. I mean, it's super fun when people want to ask. Like, one of my cook managers or kitchen managers last night was like, we don't know each other well. So he's like, what are you? You play sports? Can I guess, like, cross country or lacrosse? And I was like, all right, man, let me blow your mind for a second. And it's just, I mean, every time people just get so excited because it's just like something they've never heard of before. And it's exciting to be able to share that with people. Like, we don't all have to be on the same page or coming from the same thing. And I think the more you do in like the outdoor community, like, very few people do, you know, go this far, do certain things. And that's like an exciting component of it.
Mm-hmm. It probably is hard for people to comprehend just how big of an adventure this is. I mean, nearly a year of your life spent doing this is just hard for you to comprehend, much less just explain it to someone who might not even be familiar with the whole concept of through hiking or doing anything human powered like this. Gosh, there's so much I want to ask and so many big themes and stories and whatnot. Is there anything that's just sticking out? Like, I really want to share this right now at this point in being off trail. Is there anything else that you'd like to just tell listeners?
Nothing like no stories or anything super jump out. I mean, it was just, I'd say if you're even like remotely considering doing something like this, oh my God, just go for it. Because everyone says, oh, I don't think I could do that. Oh, I could never do that. And it's like, well, I genuinely did not think I could do this. And that's the only reason I tried to do it. Because you do a through hike, it's like, wow, okay, cool. I can hike almost 3,000 miles in a year. Wow, like, I had no idea I could do that. I didn't know I could hike more than 20 miles in a day until, you know, you did a 24-hour challenge. And it's like, oh, wow, I did 50 miles today. Like, I think everyone just tells other people all these limiting things. Oh, you, how could you do that? You can't do that. Oh, you're not trained for that. How could you just, you know, run a marathon or hike this far? It's like, why are you letting anyone limit you? Because truly, you have no idea what you could do until you just see if you can.
What did blogging do for you out there? Was that like something you felt like you needed to do, something you felt like you just enjoyed? Like, what role did that play in the experience?
Yeah, I blogged every single day the whole 322 days leading up to the ECT. I'd actually been in this like habit of daily handwriting journals for 3 years. When I was on the PCT in 22, I hand wrote a journal every single day on trail. So it's just something that I find is helps you hold on to the memories, the most beautiful moments are those little teeny details of people and names and places. So I just think it's just so precious to me to be able to remember. And I just, you know, wanted to be able to share with like friends and family, and blogging made it easier. And then once I started, continued to do it, I slowly just grew this platform of people who were, if I didn't, you know, post a blog for 5 or 6 days, they were like emailing me like, what's going on? Are you okay? And like, I just didn't realize that anyone, you know, cared or was that interested in the trip. And then it was just kind of exciting to be like, well, I'm having so much fun and so much cool stuff is happening. Like I would love to share that with people if they want to hear about it.
You know, a lot of adventures, especially with big trips like this, they are often asked what's next. So I'm going to ask you, but in a way without adding pressure, because I don't want to ever add pressure to an adventurer. Because, you know, some people are like, I did my thing. That's what I wanted to do. Now I'm this is not like what I am going to do forever. How about you? Like when you look at your life and you will look at what's ahead, what do you imagine your life being filled with? Is it more adventures like this? Is it something totally different? What do you want?
Yeah, I want this, like that crazy lifestyle to somehow be sustainable and that be my life. That would be a dream come true. I see a lot of bigger, even crazier things, hopefully in the future. I definitely want to keep doing stuff like this until for some reason I can't anymore, until the wheels fall off and my knees give out. I have aspirations to triple crown, you know, to do the triple crown in like the three big trails, the AT, the PCT, and the CDT. And I have aspirations to do, you know, I'd like to do something where maybe I'm the first woman to ever do it. I think that would be amazing without giving away too much. I have thru hiking plans for this year, and I have thru hiking plans for next year. But I haven't really announced anything yet, but I mean, I'll hopefully be on trail in 2024.
Okay.
That's, yeah, without saying too much.
No worries. No. So this is not something that's now behind you. This is something you're going to be doing more of. And
yeah. I'm excited just to see how much further I can push it, honestly. Cause when I finished in Florida, I remember thinking, if the trail had kept going, if it was 1,000 miles longer, I could have kept going. Wow. You know, so I just wonder where's the limit, you know, because I ran out of land, but where is the limit gonna be?
That is so cool to think about that you felt that good, because I'll be honest, at the end of a lot of my adventures I'm like, all right, I'm ready to be done.
Yeah. Oh, I was ready. And I mean, I was a little injured, so it would have probably been a terrible idea to keep going. But I remember being like, if my goal was to finish and the adventure was bigger, I could have, or I would have tried.
Can I ask this? And this is something that I don't always ask, but I think our listeners are given feedback that this is kind of helps them understand it more. Is you know, what was like, how did you pay for this? Like, you know, the advice I share with folks is, for me, it was like, after college or between jobs, and I would have to save money, often take a second job, sell a bunch of stuff. I'd have a lot of my adventures were funded with yard sales, and the yard sales were great because they brought people in and I just tell them about the adventure, and oftentimes there was a cause, so they donate to it. And so there's like all different ways, but for you, I mean, you know, you're not, I assume you don't have a trust fund. I'm assuming you're not independently wealthy. No. What was your scenario? Is it just that, working hard, saving money, spending little at a time as possible?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, my big secret, and it's funny, I was actually just talking to another thru hiker today about this, because her and I both work in the bar industry. I think that's the key. Like, if you're high energy and you can multitask and you can work in like a high pressure environment, move to a big city and work at the busiest bar or restaurant you can find. Cause it is, people kind of stigmatize waitressing and bartending. But if people knew how much money you could make an hour, it would make them sick, honestly. And that's the only way. So, I mean, I lived in Boston. I was there for years and worked two different jobs, and just, that's all I did. It worked, and I didn't have a lot of vices. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't, you know, partying or going out. I don't like shopping. I'm kind of minimalistic. And then COVID hit, and COVID, you know, actually kind of helped a little in mass because restaurants closed and we got a little bit of money. And then I just sold everything. So like, I don't own a car. I had enough stuff to fit into a Subaru and move here. You know, my dad dropped me off in Philly. So find a job where you can make fast money and work really, really, really hard. And that's the only secret, because everyone asks me that. It's so funny. And I'm like, I'm not independently wealthy and I don't have a glamorous career by any means.
And if I can share any resources, fellow alumni of the show or alumni of the podcast, Rolf Potts wrote a book called Vagabonding that speaks to how to travel the world very cheaply and how affordable it can be. It's not specific to through hiking, but it's definitely the same principles. And yeah, I mean, my longest trip, 6-month adventure, was funded going to school during the day. That wasn't how I made the money. How I made the money was a janitor. I was a janitor at an elementary school at night. So after school would close, I was there from like 7 to 10 p.m. every night for a whole year. And that was that's what paid for an adventure. So it wasn't rocket science. It's just kind of like working more, you know? So, and then, you know, keeping costs low, selling everything. And what's cool, a lot of people we have on the show, they do their adventure because of something like an economic crisis or COVID or getting fired from a job or a number of things. And they take that opportunity to go do the thing they wanted to do. It's not necessarily what they plan to do, but they're like, they see the opportunity and say, all right, now's the time to go do this. And it sounds like that was part of it for you.
Yeah, definitely. And then it's just once you're less tied down, I mean, finishing the PCT, I didn't have a car. I just had like, you know, a few storage bins worth of stuff. I wasn't on a lease. So it was just so much easier to move into another adventure when you're not rooted in. Like, I totally understand the hangups of, you know, you're renting or a mortgage and bills or kids and, or like loans, like college. I went to college, but luckily I was able to go on scholarship. So I don't have student debt. I think it's definitely a formula. You know, everything has to align well, and it's not for everyone because a lot of people like stuff. They like to go on, you know, vacations or go out drinking, go to dinners and stuff. And if I'm not on trail, I just want to work and save as much as I can and to be out doing something again, like all or nothing.
That's awesome. We hopefully listeners have picked up on the show. Adventure can be very cheap, very cheap, very affordable way to do things with your family compared to, you know, a lot of the things that are marketed to us. But I think a lot of times we don't feel like we can do that because what is being pushed to us as the thing to do? Well, the thing that makes a lot of money, a Disney World trip or the beach or mm-hmm. hotels and whatnot, but you can go and have amazing experiences that are so life-giving for so cheap. Maybe, you know, it doesn't have to be as extensive as a thru hike. It could be just weekend camping, but it doesn't take thousands of dollars to go have an experience outside. Now, if you want to do the PCT or something, yes, but still, that's months and months and months worth of adventure for pretty dang cheap.
It's definitely cheaper than renting and bills, you know? Obviously, it takes the upfront cost of getting the equipment. And every now and then you'll have to tweak equipment and stuff. But once you have what you need, I mean, you're just walking in the woods. I know plenty of people who really never stop and stay in towns. And then all you're paying for is food.
Yeah.
Couldn't get much cheaper than that.
Food. That's it. And there's ways to save there, you know? So it's a really cool thing to do. And I commend you. And, you know, being married to, when I married my wife, she was a bar manager in Florida on an island. And oh my God, I was scrubbing toilets for like $8 an hour. She was making, I mean, thousands of dollars a weekend. And she's been a teacher for 10 years and we're still not back to the point of what she could have made or what she was making as a bartender. Not even close. So you're definitely right. The service industry is like a hack. It's fun too. It's like, it's high so stress, fun. It's high energy, but it's not like something you're taking home with you. You're having fun, enjoying it, talking to a bunch of people. It's high, you know, it's a lot of fun and the hustle and you get tons of cash. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been loving it. It's funny. Everyone at this new job, like, I'm a pretty positive, you know, person. And they keep joking with me, like, oh, the novelty of these busy nights and the singing, like, it's going to get to you eventually. And I just kind of laugh because I'm like, I don't think, you just don't know me at all yet, you know, like, they don't realize, like, this is, oh, I'm like, this is so much, there couldn't be a more fun way to save for the next adventure.
Oh, absolutely. It beats, I tell you now, it beats the heck out of scrubbing toilets.
Which yeah, is how yeah. I was doing. And like, yeah, if you are pretty go with the flow, I'd say I'm a pretty unbothered person. It takes a lot to get me to care. So it's the perfect career to be in after hiking, honestly.
That's cool. And I'm sure for a lot of those people giving you the feedback, they don't have this almost counterbalance or the other side of the coin that you do, which is months of wilderness experiences. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of people are probably doing that job without any sort of break from it or any sort of counterbalance with culture and life. And so you've got a really good balance going on. Two extremes for sure, but no, this is really cool. Thank you so much for opening up about that. That's a part of it that I think people are more and more interested in, because it's almost a little taboo to talk about in some circles. And I don't know, not everyone's comfortable answering it. So thank you for diving into that part.
Yeah, of course.
Definitely makes it feel more realistic for folks. And well, Pegleg, Madison, thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, thank you so much. This was so fun. I was really happy to come on here.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.